I'm presuming you're a lecturer there.
Yes, that's correct.
Okay, in the computer science and information systems department.
That's correct, yeah.
Okay. And your area of speciality?
Software engineering, and also I also work in information security.
Okay. What we do is look at these guidelines from a purely academic, theoretical background. Are they sort of sound based on your expertise and your experience? Then are the what I am proposing sound, rational, realistic guidelines and controls?
Okay, we can try that. We'll see how far we get with that.
Okay. Okay, so the first section is around security policy, and basically we're saying any company that wants to, any institution that wants to be protected against security, phishing, information, identity theft, should have a security policy in place.
Yeah.
Okay, and that policy obviously should be reviewed regularly. And as new attack vectors become known, then it should be reviewed and updated.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay. Then we looked at, we said the institution or organization needs to actually have not just a policy, but somebody who's responsible for it and who owns it. So the organization needs to have a champion, so to speak. Okay, so we said the organization needs to have somebody responsible for looking after that policy, and as well as that, those specialists also need to be in touch with other special interest groups so that obviously their knowledge is current, and they provide support for each other.
That's correct, yeah.
Okay. Then we looked at the information security awareness, education, and training. Obviously, all employees, staff, etc., need to be aware and be properly trained to have, yeah, training of knowing what the threats are and what their responsibility is within the organization.
That's good. Where are you on this interview responses at the moment?
I'm in section 8.8.2, during employment.
Okay. During employment. All right, fine, I'm with you.
Okay. Then the next section, 10.4, was protection against malicious and mobile code.
Good.
That's looking at probably in our context would be things like ActiveX controls, the scripts that get downloaded when you're running other programs and you're not aware of these sort of... Oh, sorry, that's the wrong section I'm looking at. Controls against malicious code. Okay, that's actively checking all the software that will be run on the system and making sure that anything that is run within the LAN or on the machines are all obviously not carrying viruses and any other malicious software.
That's correct.
Okay.
And that none of those malicious software comes from the outside, is that also part of this? In other words, having firewalls and things like that in place?
Yes, so we're saying that there needs to be software in place that would scan for this sort of malicious software and then prevent it from actually coming into the system.
Okay.
Then 10.4.2 was this mobile code, things that would be like, they define mobile code as code that transfers from one computer to another without you actively initiating it. So that would be things like ActiveX controls and software that runs automatically. And your so they're saying that you should block this kind of code from automatically executing. So
yeah.
The user should be aware before anything like that executes on their system. Okay. It would be like in your browsers, you can set your security settings, and then it would warn you before it actually runs any of these automatic controls. It would say such and such a system is trying to execute such and such a program. Do you trust the source?
Yeah, that's correct.
Okay, then 10.6, we're looking at network security management. So that's actually this is a section that's looking at things like firewalls. We're saying protecting between your internal network and your external network, and they're looking at not just LANs but obviously wireless systems. And nowadays you've got PDAs coming into organizations, so it would be you would want to safeguard data passing from your internal network from your external network into the internal network.
That's great.
Okay, 10.8. So looking at information exchange policy and procedures. So if you've got so I think that's working with third parties, and obviously just passing information between, well, unintentionally, obviously passing information between, you could potentially pass confidential information between, from your organization to an external organization, you know, sending emails through or passing documents through. So this control says that there should be a policy in place, an information exchange policy, that covers things like when discussing sensitive information or leaving photocopies lying around or emails that you know, attaching documents and sending it through, you need to be aware that such things can be intercepted.
That this 10.8 referred to electronic exchange or to other exchange?
It's both. So 10.8.1 is saying you should have policies and procedures in place to protect the exchange of information, and then 10.8.4 is talking about electronic messaging. So if you're using, sending documents for attachment of documents, or even if you're just sending confidential information in mail, ideally you should encrypt things, or you should use, make sure it's a secure network that you're sending things on.
Okay, so that one is for both.
Yes.
All right. Okay.
Okay, and then 10.9 is looking at electronic commerce. That's obviously going to be an institution that deals with obviously online transacting. They're saying that they should any information that is passed, credit card numbers, personal information, etc. If you in an electronic commerce transaction, obviously that needs to be kept confidential, needs to be properly maintained. It needs to be managed in such a way that it can't be duplicated and sold off to other companies. So the data basically data involved in an electronic commerce transaction needs to be securely managed.
Yeah.
Okay.
That's
so,
right.
So that entire section, 10.9.1, 9.2, and 9.3, is looking at electronic commerce transactions. And this is obviously the system needs to be protected from other people stealing that information, gaining access to any information that you collect during an online transaction.
Okay. Online transaction, yeah, publicly available information.
Yes.
And on electronic commerce. Okay.
Then the next section, 10.10, covers monitoring. In this section, we are saying that systems should be monitored. The use of the system should be monitored, so you should know who's logging in, who's logging out, who changed what on the system, so that you can investigate any incidents further or any changes later on. You should also know you should know who's using the system so that you'd be able to pick up if somebody an illegal user is on the system.
That's
and
great.
And then obviously if you are auditing the use of the system, then that information that you keep in your audit logs needs to be kept secure, because that information can also be misused. I mean, if you're keeping usernames and passwords, then obviously you don't want that in your audit logs, and you don't want that to fall into the wrong hands as well. Okay, then section 11.3 is on user responsibilities. That's the users in your system, what they need to be aware of. The first section is on passwords. Obviously, your passwords need to be strong and not shared with other people, not written down, etc. Just the standard good practices of password use.
Oh, yeah. Control back for the password, yeah.
And then 11.3.2 is the equipment that a user is working on. Obviously, you must make sure things like you log off when you finish your session, don't leave the machine unattended. So it's just good user practice for your workstation or the mainframe, as the case may be.
That's right. And this must all be described in the policy also. Good. Good.
Okay. Section 11.4 is a network access control. That's looking at your network administrators. So how information is routed on the network. You should be able to validate the source and destination access, so that obviously you don't want people tapping onto the network and stealing the information from there.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. If they do, you want them to be mapped. Okay, that's fine.
Okay. 11.5 is on operating system access control. Okay. Quite similar to, a user access control. It's about having secure logon procedures, identifying the users, at the operating system level. Timing out sessions, don't leave them indefinitely active. Limiting the connection time.
Excellent.
I think it's just good user practice at different levels, at the network level, at the operating system level.
Okay.
11.7 is on mobile computing and teleworking. That's users that work outside the office and their what their responsibilities are to the company and how, because their devices are connecting back into the company networks. So it's looking at using their laptops or PDAs or whatnot on public networks. And obviously, again, making sure that no unauthorized people get access to their devices, because those devices can connect onto your system or company networks again.
And vulnerable, that's correct.
Yes. And yeah, they talk about teleworking, which is users working remotely. Okay, 12.3 describes cryptographic controls. So they say there should be policy on the use of cryptographic controls. Okay, 12.5, security and development and support processes.
Okay.
Okay, information leakage.
Okay.
That's just looking at the on your network or within a company, you use certain applications and certain pieces of software for the day-to-day operation of the business, and to ensure that those applications are secure and information passing through or being used is monitored and people are aware of what their responsibility is, just proper use of those systems. Okay, 12.6 is looking at the technical vulnerability management. Okay, they cover it from both sides. They're talking about the software being vulnerable, and then this is things like integer overflows and I can't think of these other ones. In the database, when they exploit those vulnerabilities, I know the integer.
Okay, yeah, but that's for them, you know, make sure that there are no backdoors open.
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay, so this is what they're talking about, to be aware of that and to make sure that you,
that you take care of that.
Yes.
Okay, or at least know about them. Can take care of that.
Yes.
Okay,
the section 13 is on information security incident management. So 13.1 is reporting security events and weaknesses. So if a machine or a user is compromised, so they need to be reported through to the correct, through the appropriate channels as soon as possible. And then, as well as if they are, maybe it hasn't been exploited yet, but they do notice a weakness in the system, and that as well should be reported through to the appropriate, depending on organization, person or body or whoever is responsible for security in the company. And, yeah, so those vulnerabilities and events need to be reported through.
Okay.
And then section 15 is looking at compliance. So if a company, if a country has specific laws around data protection and privacy of personal information, then obviously the company institution operating within that legal jurisdiction needs to be in line with whatever the legal requirement is. Okay, 15.2, compliance with security policies, standards, and technical compliance. And then, yeah, that's just the systems within an organization must comply with the organizational policies and standards. So it's just going down to a lower level of granularity. So if a large company has policy, then each individual section and department needs to comply with the policy of the company. And then the last section on 15.2.2, technical compliance checking, is similar to policy. They're just so each department must make sure that their systems are in line. Apart from policy being in line, the systems, the software they use, the machines they use, the type of lands they run within their departments need to be within the same levels of comply with the regulations of the company or the policy laid down by the policy.
Yeah.
And
I agree.
Okay, so that's what we've pulled out of the ISO standard, and we said this subset of guidelines and controls should be what we'd recommend that this subset be what a company or institution would take and implement, and that would be what would give them a fair level of protection against phishing and identity theft.
So you took controls for prevention of phishing attacks?
Yes.
From the ISO standard?
Yes. The ISO standard looks at security in general, and we said based on there's the general security, and then what would be specifically applicable to protecting a company or institution against phishing attacks. And these are the controls we felt would be specifically applicable.
Okay. Well, I just want to make sure that I understand exactly the bigger picture.
Okay.
You took table one.
Yes.
You took that from the original SANS.
Well, it wasn't the full table. What I took from the original SANS was the first three columns.
Okay. Of table one.
Yes.
All right.
And then we looked at what's in the first three columns. We looked at what would be the threats from a phishing attack or identity theft scenario that would be applicable to that particular control. And then we looked at what would be the countermeasure applicable to that control.
Okay, and then this is when you added columns 4 and 5?
Yes.
Okay, then you did that for the whole of table one?
Yes.
All right. And then after that, you went to table two?
Yes, table two is all the controls that were in the standard, but we said these are not applicable to the phishing scenario.
Alright, and then you set up table two?
Yes.
Okay. You sort of took it from there. That's correct. Okay. Alright.
Okay,
and then your next step will be now?
From here, we're saying we said based on the interviews, the security experts that we're speaking to, do they feel that this table is adequate? Is there anything we've left out? Is there anything that needs to be changed?
Okay.
Once we get that, if we kind of get a consensus that it's good enough, then we take this table and apply it to a case study of one organization and see how applicable it is.
All right.
And then we write that up.
Okay. All right. I see what you're getting at. At this stage, you sort of drawn this one. Now you want me, from an academic point of view, to see whether I agree with the rows that you took out.
Yes.
And the rows that you left behind.
Yeah.
Is that your main question?
Well, I think what I've taken out is quite a lot. So usually people don't have enough time to go through the second table. So what we normally phrase it the other way and say, based on what we've discussed in table one, is there anything you see, anything you don't see, anything in table one, anything that's missing from table one? You know, from your experience and from your expertise, is anything that you think needs to be added to table one?
Added to table one?
Yeah. And if you were looking at the...
Because we were discussing table three now.
No, we were discussing table one.
Table one, and then you see the interview response is table three. That's right, I agree.
Yes.
Anything that you think that should be added now to table one? Because you want to know, do I think table one expanded with it? Anything that I think that is after discussion? All right. From an academic point of view, it is my opinion that I think table one is appropriate. I don't think there's anything. I did not come across anything that is out. And I think table one is quite okay. No. I think I'm happy with table one.
Okay, great.
No, I don't think that should be in there that you took out. No, I think that one is fine. Table one is fine.